Hey everybody, Jason Klom here with the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. Before we get into this episode, which is a lot of fun, with Daniel Van Kirk, we do at one point mention, we go through it all, but just so it's not confusing why we're talking about Adam Sandler when I've gotten a lot stricter with the vinyl rule lately, because we've talked about They're All Gonna Laugh at You a few times in the past, because that's what was picked by guests. Daniel Van Kirk actually listened to What the Hell Happened to Me a bit as well, and the vinyl thing is, Lunch Ladyland, his single, was released on vinyl as a 7-inch. So that's how he excused it. And frankly, I wanted an opportunity to speak to somebody whose work I admire. He's just such a funny dude. And see if that person could maybe, I don't know if they're going to turn me on Adam Sandler, but, you know, see if they can make me appreciate it in a new way. And this episode is the result of that, and there's some interesting stuff in it. So I hope you enjoyed that. I also wanted to point out that we have a new podcast on the Stolen Dress Entertainment Podcast Network. I don't really bring those up that often anymore, but really, they deserve to, because every once in a while we'll have a new show or have like a temporary, like a short-term show. But we've got one now called What's With You, Scooby-Doo? And it's a ton of fun, and it's hosted by a gentleman named Nick Robes, who you will have heard a few weeks back on this very podcast talking about Randy Newman. And so if you go to whatswithyouscoobydoo.com, you can watch it there. Follow them at WWYScoobydoo on Twitter. And, you know, if you check stolendress.com, you'll see the podcast pop up there in our feed every week as well. We're very happy to have it on board. It's a super fun show, and I just wanted to give you guys a heads up about that. And other than that, give this episode a listen. Enjoy. Subscribe on iTunes. All that good stuff. That's about it. Thanks for listening. I'm Jason Klom, and this is the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. The year is 1993. The album is What the Hell Happened to Me. The artist is Adam Sandler, and my guest, Daniel Van Kirk.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Oh, dude, I'm
at your own place. Fuck, I did it again. Somebody else's apartment, and they're your own place, and I say thank you for being here. That's fine.
I'm here in the presence of your show.
Yeah.
The location is irrelevant.
That is, I guess that's technically true.
Yeah.
So, this is a long time coming.
Yeah, man.
All because of me.
Oh,
you
no,
you
me
used
too.
To live elsewhere, and I got lost.
I mean, downtown LA is not made for convenience.
It's not good, but like, I felt so bad because I'm on the phone with you, and you're like, did you just drive by me? And I'm like, yeah.
And I think there was like street closures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, it was just a mess. This is a better place anyway than where I was
living.
Okay,
good. All right, good. It's a nice neighborhood. It's very fancy. You're concerned about it looking dirty, and it is the cleanest apartment I've ever been in?
No.
Is that okay?
There's like a towel and pillows aren't set up.
Singular.
All right.
Oh, man.
I don't know.
I got two cats, so like...
There's a bag on the ground over there?
Yeah, it looks like a nice bag that you just went and spent some money somewhere. So my feeling is you just spent some money.
No, that's all. I don't know. I like things to be... I like it if somebody says, does anybody live here?
Mm-hmm.
Want my apartment to look like it's constantly waiting for the next Airbnb person.
Okay. That makes sense. I like that very much.
Yeah. I like space.
What you should consider, okay, if the acting thing doesn't work out, right, is, you know, they've got the vans all around with topless maids. If they were like improv mates that could come by, clean your place, and fucking do it as Mark Wahlberg, that wouldn't be the saddest thing you've ever done.
No,
right?
Not at all. It actually probably would not be the saddest thing I've ever done.
So, I mean, I admittedly, when I first invited you on, it was only because of Mark Wahlberg. And that's all I knew of your work.
I'm glad you thought it was funny.
It's not just to improvise in character that well is like a fucking ridiculous skill.
Thanks.
You know what I mean?
Did you hear that with the Sklars, or was it through Doug Loves Movies?
It had to have been Doug Loves Movies first. Yeah. I think. And then I finally got to see you at Parkcast-a-thon do it live. And I don't understand it. I don't. Because, like, I do voices, in quotes.
Sure.
But to improvise for 20 minutes as a character, as a voice that people know very well.
Thanks, man.
That hurts my brain a little bit. It does. Like, it's like, I'm not here to just kiss your butt. I'm partially here to kiss your butt. But that's, you know, that's just...
Well, I think it's really nice of you to say. You got to remember, too, a lot of times I'm doing that character with, like, some of the best comedians in the country.
Sure.
I've been lucky in that regard. So... I mean, if Doug Benson or Jimmy Pardo can't set you up for a joke,
of course
nobody can.
Yeah.
The problem is you. If they can't help you be funny, mm-hmm. then you are the problem.
Right.
So I appreciate everything you're saying, but I also feel like I've been very lucky to constantly be surrounded by people who can help make that character funny.
Yeah.
So
I get
thank
that.
You.
No, I get that. No, and that's a skill too, though. Being able to bounce off of good people is. I've frozen. I know what it's like to freeze. It's not easy. And so
you originally wanted me to. You thought my comedy on vinyl would be Mark Wahlberg's seminal contribution to hip hop community.
Oh Jesus, that would be.
That was probably like 94, 93.
Had
right?
to have been. I
was the album
so?
Called Good Vibrations?
No idea. I'm the last person that's to ask about music.
I don't think that needs to be known.
No, it
you
doesn't.
You know what I mean?
It doesn't.
You don't even have to whisper. You could loudly be like, I do not know when that album came out, nor will I learn it.
But you're talking to a guy who's like, the first albums he bought are unmentionable.
Really?
Yeah. Like, the Chumbawamba album. Actually, you know what? That's actually fine compared to the Smash Mouth album.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was of the time.
I guess.
My first CD, I know it's not vinyl, but I bet my first vinyl was probably one of those like singin' reeds from Disney with Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah,
I think that might have been my first ever vinyl. My first CD, my mother got me a CD player, was probably my one gift for Christmas. Mm-hmm. We didn't have a lot, but the thing is it was a stereo component. So it was like before you could just commonly, I'm sure they were out there, but we didn't have that kind of money. Mm-hmm. And she also probably knew buying it as a stereo component means she would get to use it as well.
Sure.
Sort of a like bowling ball Homer situation. And then my grandma went into Walmart in Rochelle, Illinois. It's the heartland. And said, my grandson's getting a CD player for Christmas. I want to get him a CD. This was before. Remember there was that era too where like, oh, it's on DVD. And it was less about sometimes the quality of the movie, more that like it's a DVD.
Of course. Yeah.
Right. So this is what it was with CDs. And she said, he's getting a CD player. I want to get him a CD. And the guy was like, okay. So she said, what's the good CDs to get? And then he said, well, these are really popular right now. Everybody's buying these. So my first ever CD is the Bodyguard soundtrack. And you know what?
Shit.
It's fucking great.
I bet it is.
Oh,
I bet it
Whitney
fucking is, of course.
Crushing it.
Yeah, of course. No,
not your most like thing to be most proud about is like a, I don't know, as the type of guy I am, it's not the music I love the most, but she crushes it, and that's my first ever CD.
I mean, quality-wise, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. I think the first thing I bought was TLC's Waterfalls, a single.
That's
which is okay.
Fucking solid.
Which is okay. Like, I can live
with
that.
That is solid, man.
I should have led with that rather than say, by the way, I bought the Smash Mouth. And recently, and I finally came full circle, Smash Mouth called me a jerk-off on Twitter. It was great. Because I did a really shitty mashup of one of their songs with a Crowded House song, and I thought it was funny. And they're like, yeah, good job. And I decided, I guess I was just messing with them a little too much, I guess.
Yeah.
And it wasn't being mean, but then it turned into somebody clearly who actually is in the band Smash Mouth writing back that I was a jerk off.
You should wait even more time and then tweet at them and be like, hey, I'm sure you've moved on, but I still think about this. I might have pushed it a little bit too far that day. In all seriousness, you guys have a spot in my life, and I hope we're cool. It just you probably won't get a response, but someone will read that.
Of course,
and the fact that you've waited this long to be like, I'm still thinking about this. I hope we're cool.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I don't want to live in a world where I'm not cool with Smash Mouth. You might get another. Good. Hopefully, you'll just get a heart.
Yeah, and then leave
it at that.
Yeah. All right, I like this. This is how we wrap that up. Okay, so. And since you're going to do the show and I fucked up, and you said I still want to do Sandler, and I'm like, oh fuck. Since then, I've had to like hammer down on the vinyl.
Yeah,
but I did the research.
You keep it vinyl.
I do. I did the research, and the Lunch Lady song came out on vinyl as a single.
Yeah.
As we discussed. But then as we were walking up, you said, wait, it's actually the second album that I'm more familiar with. So we're going to talk about both.
But actually, it's both. It is both.
That's fine.
Yeah, we had picked, this was probably a year ago? Year and a half?
Yeah, I think longer than that, actually, yeah.
When we had originally done What the Hell Happened to Me.
Yes.
But.
Which is 96.
Right, and Lunch Lady Land came off of They're All Gonna Laugh at You.
Right.
And both of those albums are super, super. If I could get a vinyl of Lunch Lady Land today, I would buy it in a heartbeat.
I
feel like it's probably a little rare, don't you?
I would imagine so. I didn't bother looking. Sometimes I do. I do look. I didn't.
It feels rare. Let's in our minds.
It's rare for me. Yep. I'm fine with that. So besides that, you would not believe how many people have like picked this album and wanted to do it.
Really?
And after I did it twice, finally the vinyl thing comes along and I'm like, I don't have to entertain anymore. No, no. That's the setup is on purpose. Because it's influenced your work and I respect your work, like, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, well, I want to know how that, like, because it's, I enjoy some of it.
Yes. Okay.
But how something that puerile turns into, then goes into the brain of somebody like yourself. I mean, the other person who picked it was Peter Atencio, who directed Key and Peele.
God, yeah. He's
right?
So
he's a fucking genius. Okay. Yeah, so I can't discount this based on the art. I have to, therefore, based on the person who likes it, I have to give it more consideration. So all you're doing is forcing me to have more perspective. So that's a good thing.
Fair enough. Let's
talk about when you first heard Sandler. I'm assuming, and maybe this is wrong, were you allowed to watch SNL as a kid?
Yes, completely. My mom, before I was born, my mom lived in Colorado with her first husband, and they went on to have me before they divorced. But he was in the military, and so she would watch the Not Ready for Primetime Players.
Okay.
And to this day, and even growing up, like, she would tell me those were her friends. She didn't know anyone, and he was in the military and either gone or stationed somewhere else, but she was just kind of at his base where when he wasn't out wherever, I don't know. But those, she says, like, those were her friends. Mm-hmm. So Saturday Night Live held a very warm place in our home, as my mom raised myself and my two younger brothers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I was fully into SNL since I can remember.
That's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
See, that's something I don't think I got. I think it was mostly, like, kind of crappy. Well, not crappy, but, like, Letterman, like, late night talk shows and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I don't know how early I got into SNL. So, like, what's the earliest years?
Phil Hartman and John Lovitz and Dana and Kevin Nealon and Victoria Jackson and Jan Hooks and Jane Curtin, right? No, she's way earlier.
She's earlier, yeah. But
sorry, who am I thinking? Not Jan Hooks. But they, that was like my first class of SNL. And then obviously that led into Spade and Farley and Sandler and Rock and Mike Myers. And I would watch those shows every Saturday night and then go to Sunday school. And Kent and Colleen Altman, who taught my Sunday school class, I don't know if indulge or put up with is what is more apropos.
Uh-huh.
But they would, I would like act out Dana doing the church lady or Ross Perot or George Bush. Or I know it's a 10-to-1 sketch. But I was obsessed with Simon, Red Hooded Sweatshirt, and Opera Man. I don't know. There was just, I was in love with it.
Yeah.
And so I would watch all those. And then it was when, I don't know the order, so forgive me. But I remember seeing Lunch Lady Land on SNL.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, if you remember that airing of it, it's such a spectacle.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost amazing. Like a rock opera. Mm-hmm. Like, it's right. I mean, Farley, like, acts the whole thing out.
It's fucking fantastic.
And I just loved it. And then I think a friend of mine named Roy Marks, with a combination of maybe like Corey McBride, who's one of my best friends, some of like one and 1A introduced me to They're All Gonna Laugh at You.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being in another friend's like old Caprice, like 1976 Caprice, just like a cool old car when we were in high school, and listening to They're All Gonna Laugh at You, just like over and over. And both of those CDs, They're All Gonna Laugh at Me and What the Hell Happened to Me, like, really run together in my head, because we would listen to these albums and we would switch them out. Like, oh, like, let's listen to this track and then take out and then put the other one on and just go. They were just so interchangeable. But I think I loved the theater of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like the theater of those albums. Like, you know, like Mike O'Brien just released like a comedy album last year, and it was, it's a lot of that, of like audio sketches.
I've been wanting to get that album, actually.
Yeah, I mean, you know, from like in What the Hell Happened to Me, that's the hypnotist sketch with Kevin Nealon where he's like farting the whole time. Now, that's a very like baseline, like juvenile joke, right?
Yeah.
But if you really listen to the structure of that sketch of how, first of all, like Adam is tries to ignore it. There's a fart like so early on that most people don't even catch.
Really?
Yeah. But he tries to ignore it, and then he tries to call it out.
Okay.
And then I believe Kevin blames him, and then the hypnotism that he still goes along with, and him keep being like, come on, we're just going to keep going. We're not going to... Okay, fine. And I don't, to this day, I don't know if Adam's pretending to laugh or genuinely laughing. Uh-huh. Like maybe they didn't tell him when the farts were going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And Kevin plays it so, he's the perfect, I mean, the perfect definition of a straight man.
Yeah.
And Adam perfectly plays it as being like, being conned into keep going along with it.
Mm-hmm.
Never to the point where you're like, you would leave. And then the hypnotism turns into him trying to say, I never farted. It wasn't me. There's just so many like level changes. Is, you know, you say like, and I thank you, it's very kind of you to say, but you're saying like, oh, I really respect your work. And obviously anybody who likes comedy respects Peter Atencio's work. That you're like, oh, it's interesting to me that something such a juvenile like type of comedy could end up like influencing people whose work you like.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the structure in those sketches...
Mm-hmm.
is what does it. I mean, you look at like the scene, the track about the 60-year-old man, and they keep kicking their friends out of the car, right?
Yeah.
The weakest joke in that is the very end where he's like, this was to show you that if your friends had sex with a 60-year-old man and you kick him out of the car, you will die.
Uh-huh.
That's like the weakest joke in it, and it's just their way to like get out of it. But like, screw you for judging me. Or when he's like, I went over to a 60-year-old... I worked at a pizza place, and then I took the pizza over to a 60-year-old man's house, and then I made him fuck me in the ass in front of his kids. And then when they throw him out, as they're driving away, you hear him be like, he wanted me to do it! I don't know why. That is just... Or like, you look at something like Respect, which is also from What the Hell Happened to Me, where it's the old man being like, hey, tell us now, you do your ABCs, you know? And it's all about respect, and they're kind of just hitting the same... thing over and over and over. I don't know if that influenced somebody like Seth MacFarlane, but you look at something like Funny or Die, Family Guy, and that the dumbest thing repeated over and over and over, if done correctly, can be so funny.
Yeah.
And
you
look at a lot of like Key and Peele, like a lot of their sketches are them saying the same thing over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
Like that Liam Neeson's is just, if you made me bet money on it,
that's a good point.
They thought it was funny if a guy just kept thinking Liam Neeson's name was Liam Neeson's.
Yeah.
And then they worked it backwards. Well, what forces these guys to always talk? What is their job that they do?
Right.
What are and then you work it back. But it started with like Liam Neeson's. And then went from there.
Point. Yeah.
So it's like, and there's so many of those just like small nuggets. I mean, like there's like four times in the... I think this is also What the Hell Happened to Me. There's like four times in the goat sketch where that sketch could have ended.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
But then they talk about the roller coaster, and then they talk about, oh, I heard him beating you from my house.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, football. They go, hey, go catch a football. And he's like, I cannot do it. You want me to go do that? You know, maybe with like a tennis ball. I could do that. And the excited southerner. Like, like that just, I don't know, man. There's just... It seemed so fun, and it seemed really deliberate.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll be honest, I am still a huge fan of Adam Sandler.
Sure.
And his most recent movie that he's in is like he's getting rave reviews. I think it was at Cannes for this movie that's going to be coming out. But like, I don't know. I feel like maybe in the past 15 years, and he's entitled to do whatever he wants, and there's people who love his work still and would disagree with me. I would disagree with them. But it's almost like he went from being so specific and weird to being very broad.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And to me, I think that that broadness is what I stopped identifying with.
Yeah.
And that's just the way I personally feel. That, you know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the reason, you know, I think Netflix came out and said, like, he was the number one searched
I saw
name.
That. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they, like, well, let's give him 7 movies.
Right.
Then
right.
everybody wins.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We win. Mm-hmm. Our Netflix fans win, and Adam Sandler fans win.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll take that.
Yeah.
I would love to have movies that people hate.
Yeah, of course. Right. Absolutely. So would I. No, I get that. You know, I wonder, and I'm not going to try and make this about me, but I do wonder if my perspective on it is tainted very much so because the people who liked it, that I knew liked it, were the cool kids. And I hated the cool kids. Yeah. Like, hate,
I don't think
hate.
I was a cool kid.
Right. Well, the thing is, you might have been. Well, okay, so you grew up. How big is your hometown?
9,000 people.
9,000 people. Mine is 1,000, maybe.
Okay.
500.
Yeah.
So, like, the cool kid. My best friend and I were the nerdiest.
I might
of the
have
nerds.
Been a cool kid in your town.
You probably would have been. You probably would have been.
Who knows,
like,
man?
You know, it's hard to say. So, those kids were not cool in the long run, but, like, overall, they were, like, way cooler than us.
Yeah.
And anything they
like
liked.
Fratty or bro-y?
100%
yeah,
they did.
I
but,
get
like,
that.
Redneck version of that. Like, super upstate New York. Like, super
yeah.
rednecky.
Yeah.
And
I can see that.
Yeah. And they discovered Cheech and Chong after we did. Mm-hmm. And so we're like, fuck you, that's our thing. You know what I mean? And it's like, and anything you like, a.k.a. Adam Sandler. Even though I was, like, resisting, like, I was holding back. There are times I'm like, that sounds really funny. But I straight up just, like, fuck that. I'm not going to. Even though I liked him on SNL.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I do wonder if that's where it's coming from. Because I get it. And when I listen to these, I do laugh at least half the things that are on here.
Yeah.
So I can't say I don't enjoy them. That would be disingenuous.
Can we run through some of the track lists on They're All Gonna Laugh at You?
Yes. Let's see. Did I pull? Oops. Nope. Pulled up the second one. So the track listing is Assistant Principal's Big Day.
Yeah.
The Buffoon and the Dean of Admissions.
Who can talk. But then in the second album, he does a clown who keeps doing, or a cow who keeps doing all this stuff, and the cow just moves.
That's right. That's right. Buddy, The Longest Pee, Food Innuendo.
See, okay,
guy.
There's another deal. He's like, oh, man. And then he puts his pants on and keeps peeing.
So stupid. But again, I'm laughing at it.
Yeah, I think there's just like, for me, a lot of like humor that I love most is something that I don't see coming.
Yeah.
And structurally, a lot of times, there's only so many ways to like set up a joke.
Mm-hmm.
It's why one of the reasons the things I love most is like MST3K.
Yeah.
Because I have there's no setup.
Mm-hmm.
It's all reaction.
Yeah.
And
right.
So I don't know what's going to happen next in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And before I can sometimes think of joke, or even if I would have thought a joke, they would say something different and probably better that just catches me off guard.
Yeah, yeah.
And being caught off guard for me is when I'm laughing the most.
Yeah.
And I think that in so many of these, you just don't think the pee is going to go that long.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You don't think that that it's going to end up being a sketch about like a 60-year-old man. Like the guy's going to be like, and then he stood up and his swimsuit was down and I was staring at his nuts and holy jeez, I wanted to lick him. Like these are lines I'll never forget.
Yeah, you know, that's like, a good point. Yeah,
there's just so many misdirects.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And maybe over time like we got used to that or changed, but I just loved it. What were some of the other ones?
I know there's also the Severe Beating series. There's this beating
those
of a high school janitor.
Now.
They do, but oddly, they're the ones that I like the most.
Yeah?
What the fuck is that about? Maybe means I'm an asshole.
No,
but,
no.
You know? Let's see. Beating of a where the hell did I leave off? There we go. And then just Oh Mom, which is, if I'm not mistaken, the grossest one. At least to me, the grossest one. Is that the one where she keeps talking about his cock and nuts, and I.
That's from What the Hell Happened to Me?
No, we're on the first one.
What the Hell Happened to Me
is
like,
that one?
It's like Jackknife, Powerbomb.
Oh, that's that
what
one.
What do you guys do? Wait, what do you?
That's right.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
It is that
do
album.
You need
shit.
You turn the lights off. I'll come in there. I'll stroke his crack and his balls for you.
God.
And then calls her mom, who's like, send those kids. The last one of the last lines is like, send those kids over here. I'll stroke off the cock and the ball. The grandma said that about. Who wants peanut butter jelly sandwiches?
Oh my god. I don't know where to go with that. I just like, it's so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It makes me really uncomfortable.
Yeah. But also, like, I don't know that Adam would like, and you know, people change, but
uh-huh.
That's so dark and edgy. And I'm not saying that makes it right or makes it funny, but it's definitely those two things.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know. It's so specific. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what he thought was funny.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean?
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, and there... You know, I'm the first person to, like, get super sensitive, like, when there's crazy racial stuff. But I don't know that there is any on his that I can think, except for the Spanish teacher. But it's not that. It's not about her being Spanish. It's just the funny idea that all she's saying is random Spanish words. And the ones we all learn, which I still think is a solid joke.
What were the other? Were there?
We got, oh, Mom, Fatty McGee.
Oh, my God. Okay. Fatty McGee.
Uh-huh.
I've still will do, like, I've done bits like that where, there's... guys I like know from high school, like we'd be at practice and they'd be like, like that'd be them, like just this pain of like having run, like but like Fatty McGee being like and you know that that's I shouldn't say you know to me that is where that sketch started, was the and then what how do we where can we put this that'll make it work, like Fatty McGee, did you take the stairs again? I don't. That was just so funny to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
What else is on there?
We got At a Medium Pace.
Dude. At a Medium Pace is a great song.
It really is.
And every once in a while, someone will find the right crowd to sing that with at karaoke. And when it's in the right crowd, like, people lose their shit.
I get that. Yeah. I can see that.
And then take their shampoo bottle.
I get the feeling. Doesn't it feel like... somebody sees Lunch Ladyland, whoever decides to give him an album deal, like, great, let's make an album of that. And he's like, oh, by the way, also there's going to be a song.
Well, I wonder, too, like, how, and maybe Adam's been asked this, but, like, how many of these are sketches that never made it past table?
That's also a really good question. Like,
and he was like, fine, I'll do it myself. Yeah. And some of them are, like, beloved in certain comedy circles. Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to see who else wrote these with him. It says Schneider, so I'm assuming that's Rob Schneider.
I'm sure, yeah.
I don't know all the names. Sandler, Spade, Meadows. Well, there we go. Robert Smigel wrote At a Medium Pace with him.
Oh, really?
Yes.
And I know Conan is in one of those baboons.
He is. That's right. Yeah. I forgot about that.
You think he's the dean?
I think you might be right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's fucking funny. I'd forgotten about that entirely.
And then isn't that isn't the grandma song on that one too? Or is that the other album?
That's a good question. Do you know the name? Here, we've got, there's the rest. That's the first album that I've got pulled up there.
Oh my God, dude. How could you skip?
Did I skip one?
Maybe not. Maybe we didn't get that far yet. But, oh yeah, you last me, so it was a medium pace. I'm so wasted is perfect because it's like, hey man, I'm drunk. Be like, oh yeah, you're real drunk or not? Yeah man, I'm so drunk. Be like, oh, how drunk are you? He's like, dude, I can't even stand. Oh, you can't stand, huh? And he's like, no. He's like, oh, because that was non-alcoholic beer. Oh really? Yeah, yeah. Oh okay. Oh man, I'm so high. Like, oh really, why are you so high? He's like, oh, I smoked all that weed. You're real high. He's like, yeah. And then they end up telling him, like, that was just like parsley or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then I think there might be an acid one where he's like, the clouds are bleeding. Like, oh yeah, they're bleeding, huh? And then he's like, then they tell him, they're like, yeah, you didn't do drugs, man. No? And I'm like, no, dude, you never did any drugs. Oh, I gotta go. And he's like, okay, see ya. And you think, like, oh, that's this was dumb and funny, but dumb as it should be. And then the sketch, he's like, see ya. And he's like, oh, okay, bye, man. And then you hear a gunshot go off. But they run over, and he's like, hey, man. Hey, what happened? Did you kill yourself? Yeah. Oh, you're dead, huh? He's like, yeah, I'm dead, man. I felt so embarrassed. I killed myself. And he's like, oh, that sucks. Nobody wanted you to die. Yeah, yeah. Are you seeing, like, your family? Like, yeah, man, there's my grandma. He's like, oh, say hi to your grandma. He's like, hi, grandma. And he's like, yeah, because there were blanks in that gun.
It's just gotten that sketch entirely.
Keeps, like, going. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's pretty good.
And the straight man is the one who has the not, like, who, it's such a good, I just love it.
Yeah.
And then the other, like, huge one off this album for me was, like, Tollbooth Willie.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God, dude. He's like, hey, Tollbooth. And he's like, hey, and he's like, $1.25, please. He gives it to him, and he gets 75 cents. He's like, oh, thanks. You know, could you keep that? Oh, sure, my friend. And then he's like, yeah, can you take those quarters and shove them straight up your stinking ass? He's like, you motherfucker. And every person is like, hey, Tollbooth Willie. Hey, how are you today? And then he does the thing, and then they offend him, and he yells. And then there's the one where the priest is like, hello, hello, Willie. And he's like, hey, father. And then he does the same thing. He's like, I'm coming out of the booth. And then he gets hit by the car. God. I don't know why. I don't know. The more I talk about it, the more dumb it all sounds, I guess.
Well, it is dumb, but it is dumb. But that doesn't necessarily mean... I mean, Cheech and Chong is dumb, and I like it. It's some of my favorite shit. Like,
It was also like a super impressionable. I mean, I remember being in Corey McBride's basement and just like drunk on Mountain Dew and listening to these tracks over, like listening to the goat track. Like, we listened just to the part where the goat got hit with the football from What the Hell Happened to Me. And he was like, you're a regular fucking Starbuck there. Hey, you really zipped that thing. I don't know why. That just like.
Yeah.
Struck us as so funny.
But I mean, that's why it matters. That's if you have, I mean, that's the whole point of this podcast is like, you've already answered it. Like, did you ever make friends over comedy, or did you have comedy that was like yours and a friend's? Like, that's like, and if it's that important, like, who gives a fuck?
But nobody, it's funny because I felt, looking back, I feel like at the time that like all of those guys were just as like obsessed with as I was.
Mm-hmm.
But none of them, like, they're not in comedy.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I
guess that's the thing, is like, eventually you hit a fork in the road to where some people are going to always enjoy this and want to be in the audience.
Sure.
And other people are going to enjoy this and want to go do it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that, but there was a point where you were just the same.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of you, like, you know, Corey went off to go do like aeronautical engineering
shit.
And I did. But there was a time when we were in a basement and we both thought this was the highest level of art.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of beautiful. I like it a lot. I mean, like, yeah. I mean, it's again, it's like I said, it's a lot of people's, this album, these two albums are people's touchstones all the time. And I've had to turn people down only because we'd done it. So we were at the potential of like doing it 10 times. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And where it's the same point with, like, at this point, I don't know that I could ever talk about Wild and Crazy Guy again or Let's Get Small and have anything interesting to say.
Yeah.
It'd all be my guests just talking for an hour. I'd have nothing to say.
Yeah.
It's hard. But I like this. This is a newer perspective on it.
Do you know what was Steve Martin's last album?
Was it the Steve Martin Brothers? I think it was the Steve Martin Brothers. I could be wrong. Yeah. I have to look. People do not like when I get this shit wrong. But I think it's a Steve Martin.
But you know what, though? That's what they're here for. Right?
Well,
in our podcast, I get shit wrong all the time. Yeah. Or I can't think of something. And I say, guys,
please,
we're all in this audio room together. Mm-hmm. I currently, or my guests, are the only people talking. But I want your help. So if I forget something, let me know.
Yeah.
We're not in opposition.
Right.
We're together.
Yeah.
So I'm lucky to have people who will be like, actually, it was so-and-so. And I go, thanks.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there's some people who aren't as receptive to that either.
But they're still doing it. Even if they're like, you fucking got it wrong. Be like, thanks. Yeah. Thanks for the angry help.
Right. The angry help. I do think it was the Steve Martin Brothers. And that's where a lot of people think it fell apart. Honestly, there's good stuff on every one of his albums. So.
Yeah.
Just as
it was falling apart for him.
He was...
No, but I mean the way he felt about it.
Oh, for him. That's a good question. I mean,
isn't in the book he talks about like the audience laughed before he moved his foot?
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, like, he did have that sort of. Yeah,
because his whole comedy, Steve Martin's comedy, was, and I'm sure I'm not saying anything if you've read Born Standing Up or whatever, but it was all built on tension, 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 and the audience decides when they want to release that tension. He's not going to tell you. He's not going to indicate the punchline or the joke, and when the audience knows the routine, there's no tension, or they laugh when they would have released retention, not when they naturally do it.
That makes sense.
They're doing it ahead of time because they know what's going to happen, and that just takes away what he wanted to do comedically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like going back to Sandler, in terms of like even the Wahlberg character, and I say that because I put it that way because this is what I'm about to say. You know, people always are like, oh, does Mark Wahlberg know that you do that character? And he does. Paramount wanted us to like do a thing together that ended up not happening. But if I ever met Mark, I would say to him, one, I hope it's cool that it's all a joke.
Yeah.
I fully understand it might not be.
Mm-hmm.
I say that to you, not to him. But I would say, I hope you understand I'm doing a person who sounds like you. with your same name. Mm-hmm. And pretty much that's where it stops. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm doing a character.
Sure.
Of Mark Wahlberg. Mm-hmm. And I think that, like, hearing these, and maybe part of the reason why it's such a big influence for a lot of people, or at least why it's a big influence for me, is that these sketches you had to fill in the gaps. Like, they had mm-hmm. to live in your mind. You had to, like, see the couch that Adam's laying on while Kevin Nealon's talking to him. And you almost got to, at least visually, create the characters, how they moved and what they looked like for yourself. And I think that just apart from the straight stand-up that I do a lot of, which I absolutely love, I think this birthed to me just, like, creating scenes off of things you thought were funny and having, like, fully fledged characters. I mean, there's an entire story to the goat in What the Hell Happened to Me.
Yeah.
It's a goat, lives with this old man who's an alcoholic. He's too old. The goat's too old to even tie through the rope. He spends all his time on the back of the truck. He's resigned himself to this life of, like, you know, no, don't worry, old man. You've got a big day tomorrow of kicking the shit out of me. You know, he's like, this is my life. But you can also hear the longing of wishing these young kids would come and, like, take him back to the roller coaster or take him with him to the Ragu Festival. and I don't know. I just, that stuff just, obviously, it really, I don't know, stuck with me in a way that, I like audacity. I like when people really, like, do something for themselves and it resonates. Mm-hmm. And they didn't do it because they thought everybody would like it.
Sure.
Now, sometimes, like, maybe you have to do some of those. You know, there's that old, like, actor adage of, like, I do one for this or two for the studio, and then they let me do one movie I want to do. So maybe there's some of that in there. But for the most part, these two albums to me just completely sound like a comic who, this is entirely what he wanted to do, was completely his voice, found people who believed in his half ideas and supported them. You can't, or at least I can't tell, how much is written, how much is made up on the fly.
Right. Yeah.
And it just, that's like something I want to achieve.
Yeah.
You know, like, every time I'm on stage, I want it to be closer and closer to my voice. Because otherwise you sound like other people, or you just don't sound like yourself. You know, I've had times where I got off stage and I was like, the show might have gone fine. I didn't bomb, but it felt like a job interview. Okay. Like, I was talking at the audience rather than talking to them.
Sure.
You know, because in a job interview, you kind of say the things you need to say so that they like you, and hopefully you get the job. And when you leave, they're like, I like that guy.
Right.
And when it feels like that on stage, that feels like shit, man. Mm-hmm. Because you're like, I didn't even run the risk of them not liking it.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't actually just saying my fucking thoughts. Mm-hmm. Like, my, and when I did a show in Houston, and one of those sets there just were like, that was all fucking me. Mm-hmm. If they didn't laugh at any of it, I would have felt horrible, but at least I would have been like, hey, that was all me.
Sure.
And I think that just, like, when I go back and I hear these, I'm like, man, did he just think, like, wouldn't it be funny if this, and then he just made that and it worked. Mm-hmm. Now, you listen to that goat sketch, and I don't know, like, when he says, and I can't remember who said, maybe he's like, oh, you got the football with you guys, you know. Did one of those, was it written, or did somebody in that sketch be like, oh, yeah, why don't you go for a pat? Like, they just build on the scene together.
Yeah.
You know? And did he want to just, did he like the sound of the goat saying superimposed? And so he was like, hey, you guys remember we went to that, you took me to that theme park, that roller coaster, and then he saw that picture. He saw the picture they took of us on the roller coaster, and he was like, what the fuck is this, goat? And I was like, oh, no, they superimposed me. And then I hear him walk away, and he says, what the fuck is superimposed? I don't know, but just the building, I think it's just a combination for as juvenile some of the themes might be, of really strong scene work, and whether parts of it that were improvised, like maybe the Kevin Nealon thing. Like, I really feel like Kevin Nealon was like, that was you that time. Like, I want to believe that that wasn't written. And if you made me put money on it, I would tell you it wasn't. But, and I might be wrong. But of people, like, listening to each other. I mean, if you and I were making a show, putting up a sketch show, and I was like, well, what about this guy who's, like, getting hypnotized for cigarettes or whatever? It doesn't even matter. But the dude keeps farting. I don't know that either one of us would be like, yeah, that's good enough.
Right, I know. I would immediately be like, I would be nice about it.
Yeah.
Right?
Be like, I think we can come up with something stronger.
Yeah. Well, you, despite the fact that, like, you know, if you're in a sketch show with somebody, even if you like their work, you trust them. Immediately that idea just doesn't, it sound. But again, I don't know. Maybe that's a bad, is that a bad bias to have?
I don't know. I mean,
I don't know.
I used to be on the same, I was on Maude Night with Mary Holland. Who's phenomenal. Uh-huh. If anybody doesn't know her, look it up.
She's great in Shrink.
Yes.
Really good in Shrink.
And, oh man, we could talk about Tim Bolts for an hour or two. But like, there was a scene once, you know, it's UCB, so it's top level. But I guarantee you the pitch was Mary Holland just like orders a Diet Coke.
Uh-huh.
And I was watching it being like, this, she's so fucking funny. But they just trusted that those, it'll all be, the balloon won't hit the ground.
Yeah.
As long as you just tell Mary Holland, like, just keep ordering a Diet Coke.
Right.
And maybe she had that. And she's like, oh, there's this weird character I do. He's like, can I get a Diet Coke? Can I get a Diet so some of that, I think it was just like that trust and just, it's just completely Adam Sandler's voice. Did you see Sandy Wexler?
No.
Watch it.
Really?
It's not bad.
All right.
Which is the best
thing. This is what people keep saying, and I'm like, I'm so hesitant.
It's still, if you did a Venn diagram of I'm assuming here, and everybody's entitled to their opinion, of like Adam Sandler movies I don't like and Adam Sandler movies I love, it definitely falls in between.
Mm-hmm.
It's not entirely in one camp or the other, for better or worse. But he's good in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there's like shoehorning of like way too many cameos that don't need.
Sure.
But it's done in a way that isn't part of the story. Mm-hmm. Nick Swartzen crushes it in a way that it's just, he's so good. And then, but there's this scene where Sandy Wexler is trying to get, they're in the studio and they're supposed to be recording Jennifer Hudson's character singing a demo.
Okay.
And the tech, they go through like a whole song, and the tech keeps forgetting to hit record. And so you have a scene where he's losing his shit on this tech, but you're, one of the devices is sometimes you, the perspective of the audience is in the studio, so you can't hear what he's saying on the other side of the glass to the All tech. Right. And it's just a perfect, it's like, it is these, that scene could go on these albums.
Sure.
Where he's like, I'm going to fucking tell you again. Hit record. And then you're going to hit it. And that's probably not even the fucking lines. But it's just that, like, that Sandler, just like that energy. I mean, it's all still there, man.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And he's obviously not interested in, like, sitting back and making money, because he makes one or two movies every, like, 16 months.
Yeah.
He loves the work.
Sure.
And he loves doing comedy. And for me, more so than even, like, Happy Gilmore and Billy Madison, these albums are just like the true voice at that time of a comedic mind and what they wanted to do. And the audacity to do it and feel like it would work. I don't know if I even have that.
Mm-hmm.
I hope so. But, you know, we censor ourselves. We're like, that's not a good enough idea.
Of course. Well, I mean, you heard me. I mean, if I'm going to be that judgmental about somebody else's work that means that much to somebody else that I'm in the room with, like, who's to say what I might censor my own shit?
Yeah.
And you make a very good point, too, about trust. Like, maybe it's just as much of a skill and a sixth sense to have that fucking trust to let somebody make the fart sketch, let her go up and talk and order a Coke. Like, that is a skill maybe we don't appreciate. I don't have that. Like, so, you know, I produce things, but, like, I don't maybe have that. I don't know. I don't know if I would. I don't know.
I mean, that's the thing is, like, even if someone goes back and listens to these albums and they don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they made it.
Sure.
Like that, they made this.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people do like it.
Of course.
So I just think that, like, for lack of a better term, just like the balls
mm-hmm.
to do it. And on some level, if you want to be like in the entertainment industry or you want to be a comic, or, you know, you think that you somehow deserve one light and a microphone to have everybody hear what you say,
mm-hmm.
it takes balls.
Absolutely.
So I love these albums.
Yeah.
And the songs, too. I know we haven't touched, like, too much on the songs.
Yeah, that's true. Like, and I kind of like the songs a lot.
Yeah, man. I mean, Piece of Shit Car is a great reggae song.
It absolutely is.
And yeah. Lunch Lady Land is an amazing, like, I don't know, what do you call it? Is it, like, a ballad? It's like a story, you know?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of the other songs off the top of my head that I can't right now. But, I mean, obviously, there's the Hanukkah song.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's the Thanksgiving song.
Right.
They're just, I don't know, they're good.
Yeah.
Whether people agree with it or not, and they don't have to, everything's subject. Like, he put the work in to do this stuff.
Yeah.
And I think even on that level, apart from how much it makes me laugh, to go back to it one more time, is just like what I love about it. Because I think most comics, but I can only speak for myself. Like, that's just what we're striving for. Of like, if whether you like me or you hate me, what you saw was 100% me.
Mm-hmm.
And to go back to Steve Martin, you know, you in Born Standing Up, he talks about he would be doing these shows in San Francisco and nobody would laugh, but then the waitresses would laugh,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and he knew that they were seeing comedy every night and they had seen his stuff 100 times, and if they were laughing, he was doing something. And Steve Martin was never trying to fit a mold that like somebody else already made. This is true. Entirely what he thought was funny, and it just worked.
Yeah.
And maybe there's been 1,000 geniuses in the last 25, 35, 40 years that were complete individuals, but maybe timing or just taste of the whatever
mm-hmm.
they did, they were completely themselves and we never heard of them.
Sure. You're in the wrong place at the wrong time.
But I always tell people, like, I'd rather fail doing this than succeed at something I fucking hate.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I will say also, and I point this out every time, not to beat a dead horse, but technically, they're also really brilliantly put together. They're produced beautifully.
These albums are great. The sound cues and everything.
They're honestly, they are up there with all my other albums in terms of production.
Yeah.
And, like, I have always respected that. And you're making me appreciate the comedy more. I will give you that. Like, I feel like every time I bring on friends and I'm like, I've had two of my friends talk about it too. I'm like, I don't want to insult their comedy taste, and that's not my goal. It's just like, it's not my thing. But then when people are into it, I'm like, well, fuck yeah, I guess you're kind of right. Like,
It also evolves, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Peter and I don't know each other super well, but like, we've met a couple of times. I think that I would call Key and Peele, is this even an argument, like, so much, quote unquote, smarter
mm-hmm.
than these albums. So, like, he evolved, but, mm-hmm. you know, like, a tree was a seed.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some of that, like, stays in there. Maybe that's just the trust aspect, or maybe that's just the cooperation aspect, or maybe that's just the idea that there are no bad ideas, let's see where it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Or that, you know, you can find gold out of nothing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, substitute teacher was like, what if there's a teacher who says all the white names kids wrong?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then you have to go make that funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, these were just hugely influential to me in a way that a lot of other things weren't. I get asked a lot, you know, like, what were your influences? And stand-up... I watched a ton of stand-up, and it wasn't until later in life I realized that every other kid wasn't doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I grew up working on farms in a farm town in northern Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Jeff Foxworthy and Ron White, like, were huge influences on me.
Sure.
Like, and that's... I grew up my entire life fishing, so a joke where Jeff Foxworthy says, like, hey, hey, fisherman, don't be littering out there on the lake. Make sure you take that beer can and fill it up with water so it sinks right to the bottom. Is that a great joke? No. But when you're a kid and that's your only influences, yeah, that's hilarious.
100% it
is. So all my influences may not always be like the best that everybody else says, but I think Ron White tells a story like nobody else's fucking business.
Ron White's.
And I think that Jeff Foxworthy wonderful. Knew exactly what his voice was and where he was coming from.
Yeah.
And these two albums from Adam Sandler, for as juvenile as they might be, I was a juvenile when I heard them anyway.
Exactly.
But I can now hear them and pay attention to like the structure and the support and the commitment. And it, if for nothing else, I love it on that. And hopefully someday I'll make something that makes me feel like I got as close to what Adam did. Although I'll probably, in popular opinion, never achieve that.
Well, that's a hell of a note to leave it on.
Oh, well, I say that with reverence, not of not to disparage myself.
Good.
I just think it's.
I completely get it.
Yeah,
and I honestly like. I think had I listened to them, been a little more open minded as a 13-year-old.
But
kid,
you know, but you everybody know? Has their influences, sure. right? Like, what of if course. My closest friends weren't into it?
Yeah,
or maybe they. What if they didn't show it to me?
Mm-hmm. Would have been interesting.
Yeah, you know, like if the biggest dicks you know hang out at the greatest burger place, I'm going to go on a limb and say you never liked that burger place.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No matter because why you were never going to go there. Mm-hmm. Why would you?
Right.
So you found like some kick-ass Thai food that only the college kids went to.
There you go.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with that.
I normally like when we're this close to the end. I ask people to give a couple sentences as to why to listen to these albums. You've already done it. Like, you've made a case. Like, you've made more than enough of a case. So I want to make sure that people know, A, where to find you, what to listen to. I only just discovered your podcast. I'm an ass. I love your show. Like,
oh, Hindsight?
Yeah.
Oh, thanks, man.
It's so great to listen. Well, it doesn't hurt that when you hear somebody do Mark Wahlberg so much on a podcast, it's like, oh, there's a super sensitive guy doing a podcast behind us. Like, okay, that's cool. That's cool. Like, it's even better. Like, it's refreshing.
Oh, thanks.
Not all comics are sensitive people.
Yeah. Every Thursday, sometimes schedule permitting, it'll come out Friday, but usually never other than that. Mm-hmm. I have a show called Hindsight. It's part of the Doll Network, which is based out of Chicago, Illinois. Comics, directors, producers, writers, just people that I like and I'm friends with in the entertainment industry. My college roommate, who's a clown at the show Absinthe and Caesars at Caesars Palace.
Amazing.
And who's a great comedic actor as well. But I have them come on. They bring three photos from any chapter of their life, and we just talk about the context of their life when those photos were taken.
Yeah.
It drops on Thursday or Friday for Fallback Friday or Throwback Thursday. And people can listen and hear us paint the story and the picture of the photo and then go to my Twitter, Instagram and see them. Or mm-hmm. see them first and be like, all right, I have to hear the story behind that haircut.
Of course, right?
And they can do that at Daniel Van Kirk on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. And I try to keep things up to date there. And then I also do a podcast called Dumb People Town with the Sklar Brothers, and that is on Feral Audio. It is just literally, if you've... Anytime you've been with 1, 2, 3, 4 other friends and one of you's like, did you guys hear about the dude that was mowing the lawn during a tornado? And then you talk about that guy and what he must have been doing, like how much he'd been getting bitched out to like do the lawn or been telling himself like, I'm going to do it today.
Uh-huh,
and
then
nothing got in his way to do so. Or he was like some sort of like a mashup between a Menards commercial and a Wizard of Oz. But like, it's literally just three weird news stories sent in by fans of the show, townies as we call them, and the Sklar Brothers, myself, and guest Riff. And we've got episodes right now with Thomas Middletidge. Colin Hanks is coming up. We just did a live show with Jonah Ray. We've had the wonderful hosts of My Favorite Murder, Karen in Georgia, John Hamm, Matt Walsh, Aisha Tyler. There's so many great guests we've had, and it's just fun. It's literally just listening to... Hopefully four funny people, we try, sit around and talk about a couple weird news stories. And that's called Dumb People Town on Feral Audio. That drops every Tuesday on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And, yeah, other than that, I was on this season of Bob's Burgers. And
wait, who the fuck are you on Bob's Burgers and how did I miss it?
The Valentine's Day episode.
Uh-huh.
It's like a spoof of Gary Marshall's Valentine's Day. And I played Flips White Fudge, who teaches Bob how to break dance.
Holy shit, how the hell did I fucking miss that?
Yeah.
So well, that is the problem with that show. Like, there are people who I think I can place and I fucking can't.
Yeah. I just talk like this, man. That's hip-hop. That's hip-hop. Yo, you don't know what hip-hop is? So yeah, that was one of the most fun experiences I've had this year.
Good.
And then I've got a couple other projects that'll be coming out later this year that I think people will be really excited about.
Well, this podcast will come out later this year, so if something comes up, tell me.
Perfect.
And I'll add something into the episode. Yeah. It'll be a while.
Just at Daniel Van Kirk, you can follow all of that stuff.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you for doing this.
Dude,
very much.
Thanks for having me on. We stuck with it, and we made it happen. And what would a podcast be if every few episodes you weren't lamenting how long it's taken to get somebody on?
It's absolutely true.
Yeah, it's one of the staples of any podcast.
Weird Al, if you're listening. Anyway. Well, that's it, guys. I'm trying to listen to a comedy album a day all year, so just go to youtube.com/comedyonvinyl, and I'm sure I'm re-releasing my comedy album from 2001 later this year, maybe by the time this comes out. Who knows?
Who knows?
And that's about it. So thank you guys for listening, and as always, have a good thing. Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. Please visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, and if you like us, give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. You can find us on facebook.com/comedyonvinyl, Twitter @comedyonvinyl, and find everything else at comedyonvinyl.com. A major portion of Comedy on Vinyl has been underwritten by Stand Up Records. Please visit standuprecords.com for all your comedy needs and tune into the new Stand Up channel available on the Roku, where you can also find select episodes of this podcast.